Members, 1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the February 16th, 2021 Taxes Committee to order. And before we, and this is under remote rules 10.01, but before we go further, I just mentioned the House Public Information Services. And just today, Barry LaGrave, who is the director of House Public Information Services, and Steve Senek, who is the Minnesota Senate Media Services Director, have won a prestigious award, and it is the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information, and the award is the 2021 John R. Finnegan Freedom of Information Award. So this is in light of, we know that with the pandemic, it is tougher and tougher to get out to the public. I mean, we've had some limitations, but House Public Information Services have done a wonderful job coming up with ways to make sure to get information out to the public, including televising and having audio and video recording of House sessions, committee sessions. You can go archive if you need. Photography, they do publications, the legislative directory, all of those type of things. So huge congratulations to Barry LaGrave and the House Public Information Services for a job well done. Thank you very much. So with that, Ms. Griska, if you would please call the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Lislegarde.
Present.
Lislegarde, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Her.
Present.
Her, present. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. McDonald. McDonald. Miller.
Present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson. Stevenson. Swadzinski.
Present.
Swadzinski, present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. McDonald. Stevenson. We do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. We do have a quorum. Representative Lislegarde, would you like to move approval of the February 15, 2021 minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lislegarde moves approval of the February 11th, 2021 minutes of the Tax Committee. Do I hear any comments or thoughts on those? If not, I'm going to ask you to briefly unmute as we vote on the February 11th, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Aye. The motion does prevail. The February 11th, 2021 minutes are approved. Members, I also want to direct your attention to a February 15th, 2021 referral memo to the Property Tax Division that is in your materials. With that, members, we've got three bills on the agenda, and the first bill is House File 501 that I will move for, will lay over and move for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And with that, I have a DE amendment. So I'd like to move the DE amendment to House File 501. And members, I can explain this now, or I guess later. I guess we can do this now. So basically, House File 501, as initially introduced, included a conformity to everything. So 2 weeks ago, House staff went over in good detail all of these conformity items that are out there for us. Remember, we are a static conforming state, which means we have conformed to all the federal laws and acts dealing with the IRS and tax code up through December 31st of 2018. So there's basically been four congressional acts and a couple more dealing with Paycheck Protection Program that we have not conformed to. And so the bill originally had all of that in there, plus it had the C Corporation, the state and local tax, a workaround. And so what the DE1 amendment does is it's all of that except I have taken out three credits that if we conform to would raise revenue. So those are out of the original 501 and they are excluded in this amendment. So those were the employee retention credit and then the payroll credit for the required paid sick leave and required paid family and medical leave. And then also what I have done is taken out the part on the C Corporation SALT workaround because Representative Davids is going to be carrying that bill as he did last year, and we'll be hearing that bill separately. So the thing to remember is, you know, why do we have this bill here? And it is so that when we have an omnibus tax bill, we have a conformity bill that we heard that we can adjust to. You know, if you've looked at the revenue estimate, it's $890 million in this biennium. We know we can't do this. We know that this bill is scalable. And what our real challenge is going to be, and I know everyone is working on that on this committee right now, is what are going to be the priorities. I mean, how can we really make things work and provide that conformity to help people and businesses who have been really impacted by COVID-19? So we're going to have to kind of look at priorities and so forth. So that's what you have before you. And I'm going to ask, I guess at that point, I'll ask for a vote on the DE1 amendment, but that's what it does. So any discussion on that before we move on? Very good. Oh, I've got a little clarification here, is that House File 501 actually had the Paycheck Protection Program. That was it. Didn't have any of the other stuff in there that we talked about in conformity. So this DE amendment is adding all of the conformity things that we saw a couple of weeks ago now. And that brings the price tag to $890 million. So any discussion? Hearing none, we'll vote on the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The DE1 amendment is adopted. So now we have the bill in its shape and form. And again, what it does, it's everything you see on the revenue estimate. It's everything we talked about the other day, except those three credits on conformity that raise revenue. So this time I'd like to ask House Research to just briefly go over kind of the major aspects of the DE1 amendment. So, Mr. Williams.
Chair Marquardt and members, you should have in your packet of materials that you received electronically a bill summary. And that includes a pretty detailed description of some of the same information we provided in our presentation a couple weeks ago about the details of which provisions would be adopted through conformity to the bill. I'm just going to mention the four federal acts that this bill would be conforming to if enacted. So the first is the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act 2020. That's a bill that was enacted in December of 2019. It was essentially a tax extender and disaster relief bill. Then there's the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that was enacted in March of last year. That one contained the two tax credits for required paid sick leave and required family leave. There's the CARES Act, which had quite a few different provisions that we discussed a couple of weeks ago. That was also enacted in March of 2020. And then there was the December COVID Relief Bill and Appropriations Act, the Consolidated Appropriations Act 2021. And that bill contained both some tax extender provisions, a disaster relief tax provision, and then also some sort of specific COVID-related provisions. There was also two public laws that were passed last year that modified the Paycheck Protection Program. And because the Paycheck Protection Program is now a matter of conformity, we're also technically adopting some of the changes made by those two acts. As Chair Marquardt said, the bill the way that it's structured is it adopts all of the federal changes, including the changes to those three credits, the employee retention credit, the payroll credit for required paid sick leave, and the payroll credit for required family leave. But the bill then additionally allows subtraction for the wages that were used to claim those two credits or those three credits. So the bill effectively conforms to the changes, which would disallow the deduction, but then allows a state subtraction to provide nonconformity.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Williams. So at this time, members, what I'd like to do is we've got about 10 testifiers. I would like to limit testifiers to about 3 minutes. After each testifier, if members would like to ask questions, we can do that at that time also. I do want to say that we have four letters, but one of the testifiers will cover one of the letters. But we received a letter from the Minnesota Farm Bureau, a letter from Medical Alley Association, and the Minnesota Child Care Providers Network. So, again, those are in your materials. And so you have those if you'd like to look at those letters. So first testifier, we've got Ben Wagsland from Hospitality Minnesota. And then I'm going to call who's kind of on deck. It will be Paul Egger, and then next, Beth Cadoon. So, Mr. Wagsland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ben Wagsland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for Hospitality Minnesota. Represent Minnesota's hotels, restaurants, resorts, and campgrounds. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the other co-authors for your leadership on this bill, and we speak in support of it. I think it's safe to say that financially, no other industry has been hit harder than the hospitality industry here in Minnesota this year. In normal conditions, this industry employs 300,000 jobs and generates about $16 billion per year in sales and remits about 20% of the sales tax. But the current picture in our state is pretty desperate for these operators, as I think most people know. This industry has lost 116,000 jobs in the last year. In a survey that we did in December with the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank, approximately half of the restaurants surveyed anticipated that they might face insolvency or financial collapse here in the first quarter. For hotels, that number was 30%, and that goes up to 60% if we stretch that out to the summer. American Hotel and Lodging Association projected that potentially as many as 600 of Minnesota's 1,000 hotels could face foreclosure by the summer without additional help. I want to remind members that, you know, in normal times even, this is an industry that operates on very thin margins. Typically, a restaurant might operate on a 2 to 5% margin, you know, compared with a typical small business that's more in the 10% range or even higher. These businesses oftentimes don't have reserves or a rainy day fund, so, you know, they're already challenged to try to meet the challenges of this kind of pandemic and this kind of crisis financially in the first place. We anticipate that this is going to be a fairly long recovery for this industry. It's probably going to be several years here. you know, getting back to 50% helps for restaurants, but it's not enough, very frankly. Most restaurants do not make money at 50%, even with takeout. They simply break even or lose less than they would have otherwise. You know, I think the PPP 2.0 is going to help, as well as some of these other aids. But we're going to all have to work together over the next 2 years to safely reopen capacity and bring other assistance to bear for these businesses if we want this industry to survive and if we want to bring these jobs back as quickly as possible. You know, businesses tell us that short-term cash flow is really critical right now. And so anything that you can do in the legislature to help with that, whether it's tax relief, whether it's this bill, though, you know, whether it's regulatory fee relief, all of those things can help. And we need to bring all the tools in the toolbox to bear. So in closing, you know, from our perspective, it simply does not make sense to send money to these businesses right now and to help get those workers back and then ask them to pay some of that money back to the state in taxes right now. So we're appreciative of this bill and look forward to working with all of you moving forward on how we can help this industry recover and bring these jobs back as quickly as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and appreciate staff as well.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Wogsland? All right. Thank you very much. Next up, Paul Egger from Minnesota Realtors and Beth Cadoon and Gino Fragnito. So, Mr. Egger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Egger, and I am Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Minnesota Realtors is a statewide business trade association with a membership of over 21,000 real estate professionals working with buyers and sellers of all types of property in every corner of the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I would like to highlight two federal conformity provisions that are important to Minnesota Realtors. First, we support Paycheck Protection Program loan forgiveness tax conformity. Unless Minnesota conforms to federal tax law, these forgivable loans will be taxed in Minnesota, and many struggling small and mid-sized businesses who received a PPP loan will face an additional tax burden. One of our members shared that he used his PPP loan for payroll and other business expenses, while at the same time his wife lost her job due to COVID-19. Having to pay taxes on the forgiven loan amount would be an additional burden he was not expecting. Another one of our members shared that the PPP loan program allowed her to save her small business and continue to pay her employees. She also was not expecting to have to pay taxes on the forgiven loan. With tax filing deadlines approaching, it is critical to conform to federal tax law and PPP loan forgiveness as soon as possible. There's also an important homeownership provision that was extended at the federal level for which we also support conformity. That provision addresses the discharge of indebtedness on principal residences. This exclusion from income for mortgage debt forgiveness was extended for 5 years. Mortgage debt cancellation tax relief provides homeowners who have had some portion of their mortgage debt forgiven by a lender through a short sale, foreclosure, or a principal reduction, relief from having that forgiven debt treated as income and taxed. In 2020, 1.2% of sales were lender mediated, which means they were in the pre-foreclosure process, already bank owned, or were subject to a lender approved short sale. Just to put that number into context, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in 2011, during the housing crash, 38% of sales were lender-mediated. Mr. Chair, thank you again for allowing me to testify on the importance of federal conformity. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Egger? All right. Thank you very much. Next, we have Beth Cadoon from Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and then Gino Fragnito, and then Todd Koch. So, Ms. Cadoon, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Beth Cadoon with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our top priority for this legislative session is to advance policies that will help speed Minnesota's economic recovery, keeping more private sector employers viable as we continue to grapple with the COVID-19 pandemic fallout. The administration of the tax code and reducing complexity and compliance burdens are also important goals that we support. We thank you, Chair, for this bill on federal conformity. This bill will help with both goals of reducing complexity and compliance costs and helping with Minnesota's economic recovery. First, we will urge full conformity with the business loans grant provisions that were provided by the federal government as a lifeline to businesses that were negatively impacted by COVID-19 and faced great uncertainty during the worst economic downturn in 70 years. We urge conformity with the Payroll Protection Program, the Economic Injury Disaster Loans provisions, the venue and the SBA grants for both the forgiveness of the loan and the expensing provisions. As bad as the economic downturn was, it could have been worse without these programs that allowed private sector employers to retain their employees and remain in business. Over 100,000 businesses in Minnesota took the PPP loan and over 40,000 took the EIDL program. There's also a handout from the United for Jobs Coalition of over 90 business associations and local chambers of commerce in support of PPP conformity that Chair Marquardt mentioned. We have heard from many businesses all around the state. I'll just give two examples as I know you have some business testifiers coming up. From a fitness center, we were closed for 4.5 months of 2020 and the current capacity restrictions result in monthly losses for the rest of the year. PPP was a huge help and enabled us to retain just about all of our staff. It was a big relief to see the feds clarify that expenses would be allowed to be tax deductible. Please help Minnesota conform. Businesses like ours are really struggling. Another example, we have a small bar and like others, we were forced to close several times over the last year. Our revenue is down nearly 75%. Being taxed additionally in Minnesota on these loans is an insult to an injury. We are counting on your leadership to act quickly as tax filing is looming on March 15th. In addition, there are other conformity items that are smaller but also important for these impacted taxpayers and are meant to help with cash flow now. We urge your inclusion of the various depreciation changes, the expansion of the charitable contribution deductions, as many businesses donated food and other items. The last item I want to flag is conformity to the federal interest expensing cap. This will help businesses experiencing revenue declines that have debt. If we don't update, a distressed taxpayer could owe income taxes in Minnesota, even if they have an overall loss in 2020. Over two-thirds of the states either have updated to the CARES Act interest expense limit or never imposed this interest cap in the first place. Thank you for your consideration, and we would urge early passage as tax filing season has started. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cadoon. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Next, we have Gino Fragnito, and then Todd Koch, and then Tim Milner. So, Mr. Fragnito, welcome to the committee, and please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Gino Fragnito. I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota Society of CPAs. And our 8,000 members serve as trusted advisors to taxpayers and businesses of all sizes in every corner of the state. And the profession has always been a strong supporter of conformity. And thank you for hearing House File 501 and the Delete Everything Amendment that goes with it. You know, CPAs have had a long history of supporting conformity, but my testimony today is going to focus on and support of PPP loan conformity. There is some urgency to this and the federal conformity bill to provide certainty to thousands of Minnesota businesses that have been affected by the pandemic, businesses that have been able to continue operations because of a federal lifeline in the form of these forgivable loans. Well, it may be unprecedented to consider an expense deductibility and loan forgiveness. These are truly unprecedented times, and the intent, as we know, was never to have the federal relief taxed. Many of these businesses may not be open today if not for this relief, and CPAs are concerned that many may close in the coming months if they do face these additional tax liabilities. This isn't necessarily, it is not ordinary forgiveness of a debt in which a taxpayer made a profit on the money. Employers did what they were asked to do, and in doing so provided a great service to their communities and the employees, and many paid their employees regardless of if there was work to do. Now they may be asked to pay a tax on those funds without having the additional money to actually pay that tax. The questions I've heard most frequently from CPAs in the last few weeks have been, what will Minnesota do? And when will we know? The April 15th deadline will be here soon, but the March 1st and March 15th filing deadlines will be here even sooner. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, time is of the essence to provide this relief and certainty to the businesses that use the PPP loans to keep their employees on the payroll, the doors open, and the lights on. We would ask that the bill be passed as soon as possible to provide this certainty as we head into tax filing season. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Fragnito, thank you so much. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. Next we have Todd Koch, then Tim Melner, and then Molly Jungbauer. So Mr. Koch, if I pronounced that right, if I didn't, I apologize. If you'd please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Todd Koch, so you did it absolutely correct. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time to hear from the perspective of somebody who is in the midst of tax filing season as we move through here. And why we're trying to pull everything together with trying to deal with retroactive change, prospective change, current change, and proposed changes all at the same time. If we can have some certainty, it sure would make life a little easier. I want to point out a couple things. One is there are some of the changes in there that have very extended, complex calculations. And I'm sure my clients really love paying me to do expensive, complex calculations that are required for differences between Minnesota and federal law. Easy example of that is under the IRA rules, there's a provision that allows someone to take money out of their IRA, pay the tax over 3 years, and put the money back. Minnesota right now would tax all the money up front. But how do you deal with putting money back? Do I have a difference in a basis in an IRA that might sit there for 20, 30 years? And who's going to remember how to do that down the road that wasn't involved in this situation at this time? Or can you imagine trying to do depreciation calculations where we're dealing with buildings where I may have to worry about difference between 15 and 39 years or up front? And some of it I have to do on a difference of years. Some of it I have to add back 80% in year one, and then the rest over the next 5 years. There's not one consistent method. There's not one consistent manner. And that creates absolute chaos for those of us trying to help explain the system and comply with the system. I also ask for your thought on the PPP forgiveness. I understand the taxability, allowing this to be an excludable income item is very costly. But if you think about it, it is one of those things that people are totally unexpected of. I have not found one client, when I brought it up to them that this is taxable, they think that I am absolutely, that I have no idea what I'm talking about. But we kind of lead them through it. And when you have provisions that people don't understand or it doesn't make sense to them, it's very hard to get compliance. And realistically, I explained, well, what happened here is, yes, it is government assistance from the federal government. But the way Minnesota is, they're going to tax you on your government assistance. Now, if that's what we really want to do, if that's what you want to do, you can make that decision as a body. But it's very difficult to explain to a client that they're being taxed on government assistance when they're just trying to stay alive. I thank you very much for allowing me to testify here so you can understand some of the complexities that our system has. Whatever we can do to help that would be very much appreciated, and allowing our businesses to help survive and thrive so there's jobs to come back to would be very much appreciated. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Koch, thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Koch? All right, thank you. We're going to move to Tim Milner, and then Molly Jungbauer, and then David Henrich is next. So, Mr. Milner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Milner. I am the president of JIT Powder Coating Company in Farmington, Minnesota. My business provides coating services to a variety of Minnesota manufacturers, people who make things out of metal. Some of my business customers are essential business, So JIT has been in business throughout the entire pandemic, even though we still experienced a 35% reduction in our revenue because a number of our customers were not essential businesses and were forced to shut down during the pandemic. I am here to talk about the PPP conformity. In my particular case, JIT received a $550,000 PPP loan. That loan was used exclusively for payroll. I have 59 employees. My employees make between $15 and $37 an hour. Those employees also have company-provided benefits. And during the pandemic, even though that we had that 35% reduction in sales, I kept everyone employed. I kept everybody on getting their entire 40 hours worth of wages, even though we didn't have 40 hours worth of work. We even had 7 college kids who we had made a commitment to in February to be summer helpers for us to cover vacations. We kept them on the payroll as well, because it was my contention that if the government was giving me money to keep people employed so that they could keep their homes, that they could buy their food, they could pay their rent, their utilities, the essentials that they needed for their family, it was my moral obligation as a business owner to make sure they got that money. And so when it came time for me to submit for my forgiveness of the PPP loan, it was very simple. I was able to submit 9 ADP payroll slips showing that every dollar that I got was given out in payroll. As part of that payroll slip, I feel it's important to point out that $36,000 was sent to the state of Minnesota as Minnesota withholding tax. So in a net way, Minnesota's already received some tax revenue from the PPP, because without that money, I would not have been able to continue to guarantee the 40 hours of wages. I wouldn't have been able to keep everyone employed. And that withholding tax would have been far, far, far lower than what I was able to already send to the state with the form of withholding tax. We hear frequently that small business is the backbone of the Minnesota economy. I think this is a time for the government to stand up and prove it. We need conformity. We don't have the cash setting aside to pay this tax. It's money that has been used. In fact, quite honestly, if I wouldn't have been able to show that I used it for all those payrolls, the federal government would not have given me forgiveness. So the money's gone. It's not a windfall to me personally as a business owner. Okay, this is something that was given to my employees. It was given to them to keep them viable, to keep them moving during a pandemic. And so, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I certainly hope that you really, truly understand how important this is to small business. We don't have the cash set aside. We are still all trying to rebuild. And I certainly hope that you all see this and vote in favor of conformity on the PPP program. Thank you very much.
Mr. Milner, thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Milner? Again, thank you. Next, Molly Jungbauer, David Henrich, and Joe Pickett. So, Molly Jungbauer, I don't know if I've pronounced that correctly, but if you...
You did. It's an old German name, so thank you. You did.
That's what I thought, that J is not like a J, so please proceed and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am the CEO and co-owner of Holsted Consulting. We're an IT consulting firm, and we typically employ approximately 175 Minnesotans, and we're located in Mendota Heights, Minnesota. I emphasize the word typically because 2020 was a very challenging year and anything but a typical year for Holsted, like for many small businesses. I'm here today to ask, like other testifiers have, that you conform with the federal tax treatment of the PPP loan forgiveness, because it is the right and the ethical thing to do for Minnesota small businesses. I know that you recognize how important small business is to our state's economy, and that our state needs to do everything we can to support our small businesses in this time of great stress and need. I also know that most of you possess extensive knowledge of finance, so you understand that the PPP loan did not replace earned income for these businesses. If the PPP funds were earned revenue, they would most likely produce a net profit or excess cash that would provide the funds to pay income tax liabilities. But instead, the PPP loan proceeds were specifically designated funds that were used to pay for rent, utilities, and most importantly, employee pay and benefits. They were paid out dollar for dollar for our obligations, leaving no extra funds to pay tax. They helped many small businesses like mine stay afloat during this pandemic, especially during the dark days of early spring, when many businesses didn't think they were going to survive this ordeal. Personally, my business dropped significantly, 35 to 40% during this period. And at that time, it appeared there would be no floor based on the conversations we were having with our clients. Remember, we are consultants, we're staff augmentation. So we're the first to go when our clients are looking for making cuts with employees. So it was truly a very frightening time. Like many businesses, we retained most of our employees during this period, even though many were truly not productive, because we simply had very little business for them to work on. So to be crystal clear, they were helping us generate revenue or net income because our business demand was reduced to a slow crawl. They were not helping us, excuse me. Despite our drop in demand, we did not cut their pay or benefits during this very scary time. Instead, we retained them because we were given the PPP loan to help us through these very dark days, and because, quite simply, it was the right thing to do. We were also assured that it would be forgiven and not taxed by the federal government, and having faith in our state leadership, felt confident that Minnesota would also do the right thing and not tax the proceeds. Many small businesses simply do not have the funds to pay a Minnesota tax bill on their PPP forgiven loan, because, first of all, the entire funds were used for the purpose they were intended, again, dollar for dollar, to pay for their employees and operating expenses. We were simply a pass-through. Second, they most likely have suffered great economic loss due to the pandemic and did not generate a profit for 2020. In other words, any excess cash to pay a large tax bill, and now may even be looking at having to take another loan if they are even eligible to pay a Minnesota tax bill. So this is truly what we want to do to our small businesses. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I implore you to do the right thing for Minnesota small businesses who have gone through a tremendously scary and challenging time and conform with the federal tax treatment of the PPP loan forgiveness. It truly was a life preserver for many Minnesota small businesses, and we have endured so much this past year. We only want to get back to what we do best, supporting our state's robust economy by providing jobs for hardworking Minnesotans. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And would you please, just for the record, state your name? I don't think you actually did that.
Molly Youngbauer.
All right, Ms. Youngbauer, thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions? All right, thank you. We now will move to David Henrich, and then Joe Pickett, and then Steve Bounds. So, Mr. Henrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Henrich. I'm the president of Bergerson Caswell Incorporated. We are a full-service water well contractor out of Maple Plain, Minnesota. We serve the residential, commercial, municipal water sectors, water well sectors, and groundwater supply for both private and public water systems, as well as doing a lot of geothermal environmental work. I'm here today testifying on behalf of myself and the other small business members of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. You know, we appreciate the committee taking up this measure and hope they'll see fit to pass it. A lot of people have already put out a lot of the numbers and a lot of the real stats about, you know, what this measure has done or could do to the small businesses that are still recovering from an unprecedented year of operation. And I just kind of wanted to go through, you know, our situation and what we did with our PPP loan. Like Tim, you know, we used 100% of our PPP loan to fund our payroll. You know, this measure was always about, you know, how do we keep our employees employed? How do we keep them secure? Because when you have employees that are doing something as critical as you know, providing water supplies for the citizens of Minnesota, we need to keep them around and keep them available. You know, on the onset of the pandemic response, you know, we had some really scary decisions to make. You know, what was the market going to look like? Were we going to be able to afford to keep everybody on board? We were getting really close to having to make some really hard decisions to keep operating and how we were going to keep operating. You know, the PPP funds are really the one thing that allowed us to keep all of our employees employed, keep everybody available, so that when people needed emergency response, water system maintenance, you know, we're not, you know, building fidget spinners here. We're providing, you know, drinking water, safe potable drinking water to a lot of different people in the state of Minnesota. So, you know, the PPP funds were exclusively for keeping people employed and keeping people available. So as the markets sorted themselves out and people got back to work and we found ways to, you know, safely operate through this climate, enabled us to keep people around, you know, so we kept people around so we could train them. We kept people around so we could get back to work, because training and retraining people for our industry takes decades. You know, most of the people that are good at what we do have been doing it 10 or 20 years. So, you know, kind of long story short is the PPP was a very necessary step to just keep people employed. And, you know, anything we can do to continue to help small businesses on their path to recovery here through the next year, I think those would be steps well taken. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Henrich, thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions? Thank you very much. We now have Mr. Pickett, and then Steve Bounds is our final testifier. So, Mr. Pickett.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Joe Pickett. I live in Maple Grove, Minnesota, and I'm here to give you one other small business owner's perspective on the PPP and how we used it. My wife and I own two franchise childcare centers called Primrose Schools, one in Brooklyn Park and one in Maple Grove. As you probably know, childcare was designated as an essential service, and we were asked to stay open right as the pandemic started to be able to serve essential workers. So I had some challenges to figure out how we were going to do that, as our enrollment within a week had dropped 75% of what was normal. On April 20th, we received about $500,000 of payroll protection program funds. And I know that seems like a lot for a small business, but it was 2.5 months of payroll and benefits for my employees and my family. We calculated it out and intended to use it just for that. So our intent right up front was to make it forgivable and to try to not take on a big debt for our business. We used the revenue we had coming from grants and our small amount of income to pay our other bills. And we were able to, and we proudly say this, to keep all of our other expenses up to date, including our property taxes, which is a big number for a childcare center. The planned use of the funds was to keep all 65 of my employees fully paid, including their benefits. I was not thinking about the tax implications at the time. I was just trying to figure out how to make it through the next 6 months and to stay open for our families that needed us. Without PPP, I probably would have had to lay off over half my staff. And from my perspective, we would have been putting them on unemployment, and essentially the state would have had to pick up the tab for their income and benefits at that point. During April and May, many of our employees were paid but did not have to come to work. We were still low on enrollment. We didn't have enough kids coming in, and we were also working to minimize the number of people in our building so we didn't have additional spread of the virus going on at that time. Had I known of the tax implications at that time, I might have made a different decision. I might have decided to avoid the headaches of applying for the loan and worrying about how to pay the taxes on it, which would have resulted in layoffs of employees. Now, I, like everybody else, did feel a moral obligation to try to keep all my people employed and fully employed and on their benefits. So I did everything I could, including getting PPP to make that happen. But I essentially, in a way, subsidized the state unemployment system by keeping people on that I didn't have to have on at that time. So I'm asking that the PPP loan itself be forgiven because it is not a profit. It would turn a loss for last year into a profit, which would put a bigger tax burden on me. And there was no real profit to be gained. All that money was put towards expenses. So again, that's kind of an echo of what other testifiers have said today, but I do want to, you know, state that we did this because we felt it was the right thing to do, and we weren't anticipating a tax hit coming later on. So I am supportive of the bill and would love to see Minnesota conform with federal law as well. Thank you.
Mr. Paquette, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, Mr. Bounce.
I guess I get to wrap this up. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Steve Bounds. My wife, Angela, and I own and operate 5 Club Pilates franchises in the Twin Cities. So I'm here to provide another small business perspective from one of the hardest hit sectors. In 2016, we both left 27 years of careers with big corporations to pursue the American dream of business ownership. In 2019, after more than 2 years of hard work, trial and error, investing back in the business, we made our first real profit. We were finally able to pay ourselves and consequently pay taxes. In 2020, we had an amazing start to the year as we readied to open our 5th studio in Edina. And as you know, what happened shortly after that, our dream of business ownership became quite the nightmare. And I'm sure I'm speaking both figuratively and literally for those other small business owners who spent countless nights over the last 11 months up worrying about their business and employees. Minnesota executive orders and restrictions had our 5 locations closed for nearly 5 months last year and operating at 25% occupancy for an additional 5 months. We continue to operate at 25% occupancy today. The results have been devastating to our business and our employees. Even with the addition of a 5th studio, we had a 42% year-over-year decline in sales. 45 of our 49 employees had to be furloughed during the closures and had reduced hours due to occupancy restrictions for the other 5 months. COVID-19 restrictions on fitness did not stop any of our other obligations. It's more than $50,000 per month in rent, utilities, and other fixed expenses, and continue to increase our losses. By way of example, our landlords have not reduced our rent to 25% simply because we've been sitting at a 25% occupancy for almost 7 months. The CARES Act and Consolidated Appropriations Act, along with county, city, and local grants, have been saviors for our business. While they have by no means made us whole, without the PPP loan and SBA loan, along with bonus depreciation against our 2019 tax liability, we wouldn't have been able to bring all of our employees back, and I mean all of them, and continue operations beyond the 3 months closure we had last spring. Tax code conformity with PPP and other components of these acts is critical to our health and the health of thousands of other small businesses. Besides the substantial hit in top-line dollars associated with non-conforming tax, there's an incremental professional fees needed to navigate these taxes, along with unintended consequences from having non-conforming tax laws. And I'll give you a quick example that when utilizing the bonus depreciation included in the CARES Act last year to reduce our federal tax liability through amended tax returns, we actually ended up having to pay Minnesota an incremental $1,300. And to make matters work, the real gut punch a few weeks later received a bill from the state for both penalties and interest on that incremental tax liability because of the amended tax returns we've done, just for acting on a bill that was meant to help small businesses. All these things obviously put a significant strain on hard hit businesses. We've had to continue to do our part to help Minnesotans stay safe during this pandemic. Now I humbly ask you to do yours and help change Minnesota's tax laws to conform with the federal code so that we can get back on our feet again. Thank you for your time and for listening, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bounds. I know we do have one question, so we'll go to that. We'll start any members' questions and so forth from this point on, but I do really want to thank those testifiers, those business owners for sharing your situation with us. I really appreciate that. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you all the testifiers and everyone discussing this important question. I don't know if my question is my question is directed to, if it's you, Mr. Chair, or if it's one of the testifiers, but I believe that the conformity on the PPP price, the price tag on that was like 400 and something million dollars, and I apologize, I don't know the exact number. But are there proposals that we have coming forward? We're a balanced budget state, so we're going to have to pay for this somehow. Are there proposals on other tax increases or cuts? Are there any ideas of, and I know that's sort of a broader question of this entire session, but do we have a feeling, Mr. Chair, of where, if we approve this, where we're going to find this? Or is this money that's, you know, on the, where's it coming from? I'm just curious.
So Representative Miller, I mean, it's $438 million this biennium, and that is just from the 32% of the businesses they feel will have an income. So there's probably up to about $800 million of potential net operating losses that could be carried forward into other years. So, I mean, this would come out of the normal budget general fund, and I think you hit this right on the head, is that we are, you know, unlike the federal government, we actually have to balance the budget. We can't run up $27 trillion debts. And so, you know, I know members on both the Democratic and Republican side in the committee are working on priorities, just not even looking at the dollars right now, but just looking at priorities of depending on what type of a target we get and how much we would have to give to this area. You know, we still have to know. But so it's a normal budget item, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I had.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and testifiers. I have a question as Representative Miller. I'm not sure who might answer this, but I wondered. I've had questions all through the summer and fall about PPP, and I'm not sure I've been able to give a lot.
Oh, Representative Sandell. We missed that last little bit. So
I've had questions all through the summer and the fall about PPP, and I'm not sure I've been able to be very helpful to my constituents. I do have a couple of questions. First, how are the size of the loans available to the business owners calculated? How long, what was the longevity of that loan? 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, or as long as the owner requested the funds? Thanks.
Mr. Williams, can you answer that? Or maybe we can get the staff later. I know in PPP 2.0, you could apply for up to 2.5 times the wages of your employees unless you are in a NAICS code of 72, which is hospitality and leisure. Then it was 3.5. But I'm not sure what the duration was. Mr. Williams, can you help us out with that?
Chair Mark Ward and Representative Sandell, I don't have the exact numbers. I think Representative Mark Ward is correct that it's kind of a function of your expenses in terms of wages paid and other things over a certain period of time recently. And sort of the other constraint is, in order to qualify for the loan forgiveness through the program, you would also have to then pay out in qualifying expenses the amount of the loan in order for it to be forgiven. And then a certain threshold, I think it was initially 80 and may have been, it was reduced, I think, to 60, but don't quote me on that. Once you paid back, you had to pay a certain 100% of the amount borrowed in qualifying expenses to get forgiveness of that amount. And a portion of those expenses have to be wages. So I think it was initially 80 and it got dropped in one of those two subsequent PPP bills, and I believe it's to 60%.
Miss Mr. Wogsland, I see you have shown up on the video. Would you like to respond to this?
I was just going to confirm, Mr. Chair and members, that's correct. 60% goes to payroll if you want to get it forgiven, and the other pieces have to go to things like rent, mortgage, utilities, and then there was some expansion for vendor costs in PPP 2.0.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandell, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And business owners knew that the loan might be forgiven, but taxes would still be required, correct?
Well, I don't know if they know that. I do know that when that was passed back in the CARES Act, that Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said it should be taxed. But there was always that question going back and forth. And then in December, not until December, that the federal government really decide that, in fact, the expenses would be deductible. But up until then, it wasn't for sure thing ever decided by Congress till December of 2020.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I guess maybe mine isn't as much a question, but well, maybe it is. You know, me being new to taxes, and I apologize if maybe this isn't something that I would say here, but I am really concerned. I'm really supportive of the conformity and the impact this has in small business. I come from a long line of small business owners, so I completely get how small businesses operate and why it's important. My concern is that, like, there is no nuance or difference between, right, the first round of businesses that got PPP funds, and those are larger corporations who were able to sort of, you know, I mean, we didn't have certain measures in place. And so those organizations that were very large, those companies, they were able to access that. And we had to wait for subsequent rounds of PPP or for small businesses to get their share. I see that this is a continual thing that we do in our country in general. And that, you know, when I think back to the 2009 financial meltdown and companies, and I worked for a Fortune 100 company at the time, and they were able to reclassify themselves as a bank so that they could receive the federal support that was given to banks and financial institutions. And, you know, and we made record profits that year. And, you know, I got the biggest bonus when I worked in that year. I got the biggest bonus I'd ever received working for a Fortune 100 company in a year where everybody was losing their jobs. They were getting funding to bail them out. They were getting tax breaks and tax support. And I guess I'm really, to me, I guess I don't know as a tax committee or in the state of Minnesota how we address those issues in which the largest corporations continue to get the breaks that they really don't need. And we do know that during this pandemic, a lot of corporations, a lot of big companies did very well during this time period. And so I don't know. I guess I don't know. And maybe the question is, like, how do we as a state really look at the disparities and who gets the benefit from these tax systems and be equitable about that? And, like, how do we continue to support our small businesses but not allow those who maybe aren't really paying their fair share to continue to pay their fair share? And I don't know the answer to that, but I really just wanted to put that out there. And this isn't the first time we've seen this. We've seen this throughout history of our country, of how we continue to let large businesses do well and benefit off of the system and because they know how to navigate it. And so, and I am very aware that today there were no large corporations here testifying saying, this is really great and we really want you to conform. And this is, you know, like nobody's here from that sector to testify today. And so I just wanted to make sure that that was put out there. And I don't know if maybe this is a conversation I take offline with you about what we can do when we look at the disparities that exist in this space.
So, Representative Hur, I mean, I think everyone's kind of realizing the $438 million is going to be very tough to do. So it's going to have to be targeted. And I think we need to find a way in which we can target to those that have been hit the hardest. And it may be large. It may be small businesses. So, you know, I don't think we can just make a blanket statement on, you know, just being larger that. I mean, I think we have to look at those that, you know, are the ones that are going to be the most in need, because we're just not going to have enough dollars necessarily to do this. But that's going to be for the, you know, you bring up great points. That's going to be for the committee to have to decide what are the priorities. So we've got three more, and then we're going to move on to the other bills. So Representative Denver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for the business testifiers that came before us today. I guarantee you, Mr. Chair, and the rest of the committee, that if you look at your emails that I have looked at over the last few days, We all have emails from constituents that own businesses that have this same issue. So there's, you would say there's 201 legislators, including the Senate, that have constituents with this issue. So thank you to those that came forward today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this has been a great, robust discussion. Members, I just want to make sure that all of us understand that small business in Minnesota really is the economic engine of Minnesota. And what we're really talking about here as we struggle to figure out how to pay for things in a time of a projected deficit, where priorities should be. And everything is a priority to all sorts of different interests. We all understand that. Each of us represents our constituencies that has very strong needs. But I think what we want to be thinking about here in terms of how we grow out of this recession that's been created by the pandemic, how we are going to grow jobs and what that means to the Department of Revenue in terms of employment and to deed or unemployment and the costs of unemployment or continuing stagnation. But most importantly, keeping these businesses afloat, creating the jobs, getting people back to work, all is income producing to the general fund. The wages earned is income tax received. The wages earned is sales tax revenue earned or collected in terms of consumption. And if we don't do things and give priority to these struggling small businesses to make some tax conformity and to mitigate the costs of surviving this shutdown, which government largely has directed and these companies have been compliant in shutting down their businesses or operations, we're gonna be on a trajectory that's gonna take much longer to recover from this recession. And it is not too unlike what I lived through for almost 7 years with a housing recession and everything going to bust. We got to such a situation that you just didn't have the comps to support sales, and that meant the recovery was protracted in getting the market back to where it had to be. And so this is going to be a slower recovery. We've already heard testimony from some of the testifiers about how long it's going to take for some of these industries to really get back on track to where we were. And I know it's going to be difficult for all of us to try to balance the needs of those who we perceive to be the big corporate interests, but we're really talking about organizational structure with regard to tax law. C-Corp, an S-Corp, an LLC, they're all corps, but they're set up for specific reasons, and that is to encourage risk-taking to create jobs in a robust and vibrant economy. So with that, Mr. Chair, I won't carry on any longer, but we really need to recognize that this recovery is going to be slow, and we need to do what we can do to make these jobs survive and opportunities for employment to survive. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Final word to Lead Chair Davis.
Well, thanks, Chair Marquardt. And if I could maybe ask a question to Sean Williams. We often hear in this committee the term fair share. I'd like to know from Mr. Williams, is that defined? What is someone's fair share? Does fair share just mean take more money from people that have worked hard all their lives? Or is there somewhere in statute where it talks about fair share? Or is it just nonsensical gibberish?
Mr. Williams, I'm not going to have you answer that question. Representative Davids, another question that we might be able to answer.
Well,
I think you made the point, but that's probably not one for Mr. Williams to answer. I don't think there is anything in tax code that specifically says that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought there must be because people talk about it all the time. And I'd like, you know, Mr. Williams is a really smart guy, kind of like a definition, but I can... out of respect for you, Mr. Chair, I can talk to him offline to find out what that actually means.
Very good. And Representative Davids, it's probably in the eye of the beholder. It's one of those. All right, members, thank you so much for the testifiers and for the conversation. We've got a long ways and a lot more work to do on this. And, you know, we're working on prioritizing. And we're also looking at ways to help those individuals and businesses who have really been hit by COVID-19. And some of that help can come through the tax code, but a lot of that help also can come through appropriations and other ways. So we've got to kind of look at a balanced approach. So members, with that, I would like to renew my motion to lay over House File 501 as amended for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Again, thank you very much. All right, we are going to move next to Representative Swedzinski, House File 768. Would you care to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 768 before the committee for possible inclusion in this year's tax omnibus bill.
Very good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the Tax Committee, for the opportunity to talk about this, a very important bill. House File 768 really is a lot of things. It's most importantly tax relief to local units of government. You know, under current law, cities and counties, they are sales tax exempt. But in the reality of the situation, because of lump sum contracts, the carpenters or the construction companies that do the purchasing on behalf of those sales tax-free entities like schools and local units of government pay the sales tax on the acquisition. And so the reality of the situation is that local taxpayers and the state are paying sales tax on these items as they're purchased. And so this bill really just helps simplify it and moves the sales tax exemption to the businesses that are doing the project. And in the past, what's been used is simply at the end of the project, the receipts are gathered together and they're turned in, and then that sales tax money is essentially remitted back to that entity through the state. I believe the fiscal impact on this bill is about $100 million in 2022-23 and about $140 million. This bill, if passed, will build more roads. This bill, if passed, will build better and stronger sewer systems. This bill, if passed, will help all types of construction projects around the state and do it cheaper and cost taxpayers less money in bonding bills, cost taxpayers less money in local option sales taxes, and all the rest. I have two testifiers from the city of Marshall, City Administrator Sharon Hansen, and also Mayor Bob Burns from the city of Marshall to speak on behalf of the bill. And I believe there's folks from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and Counties as well. Again, appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee, Chair Marquardt.
Representative Swedzinski, thank you for that description of the bill. And so we will start with Mayor Burns. If you would introduce yourself, and if we could keep our testimony to a couple minutes here, we still have a couple more bills left, but want everyone to be able to get the important parts out. So, Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will keep my testimony brief in respect to you and the committee. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Bob Burns. I'm currently in my 35th year of elected office in the city of Marshall. And last November, I was elected to my ninth term as mayor. The issues addressed by the bill are important to my city. Like most cities, we have ongoing infrastructure improvement projects. Marshall currently has a chloride reduction project under construction at our water treatment plant, a companion project at our wastewater plant. We're renovating our city hall. So in all of these projects, we seek ways to reduce the cost of the project, so to reduce the cost to our taxpayers and our ratepayers. The current allowance to exempt city projects and purchases from sales tax, as Representative Swedzinski described, is really not very workable. My city has experience with that process. Several years ago, our city water utility followed the current process for a water pipe extension to a newly developed well field that's 27 miles away from the city of Marshall. So that involved 27 miles of 24-inch PVC pipe. So we purchased the acquisition of that pipe separate from the bid for the labor and installation. So as a result, the city needed to take delivery of all of that pipe. We needed to store all that pipe, which took virtually every vacant piece of city-owned property in the city of Marshall. And then we need to deliver that pipe to the installation locations along that 27-mile route. And we needed to assume the risk for any damage that happened to the pipe, any inventory issues. So based on that experience, we've not gone through the current allowable process for any of our subsequent projects. So designating what this bill would do, designating the contractor as the legal purchasing agent on behalf of the city would resolve the issues that we encountered. So I hope that the committee supports this proposal. I really thank the committee for your work. I thank you for your attention, and I welcome any questions the committee or you, Mr. Chair, may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor Burns. And I know Sharon Hansen is here to testify or maybe to answer questions, City Administrator Marshall.
Mr. Chair, I believe Sharon Hansen is not available. She had another commitment that came up.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you. So we have three other testifiers. I've got Gary Carlson, Matt Mossman, and Matt Hilgert, all experienced before this committee. The chair is asking 2 minutes or less from these experienced testifiers. So, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I want to thank Representative Swedzinski for offering this bill. We brought this bill to you in several of the past biennia, and we strongly support making this change in state law. I'll just be brief by saying that we've included a letter from many organizations in support of this bill, including the League of Cities, Association of Counties, School Boards, Townships, Inter-County Association, Metro Cities. Interestingly, this year, the Council of Nonprofits and the Associated General Contractors felt strongly enough that they asked to be added to this bill as well. Let me just say, this bill is a general law solution to the 8 bills the committee has already heard this session. This would allow all local governments across the state to reduce the cost of local construction projects for things like wastewater, water treatment, school buildings, public safety facilities, public works facilities. This bill would solve all of those issues. I want to thank the Department of Revenue for working with us on this bill and finding a solution that we can all live with. And I will stay on the meeting to answer any questions on the challenging current law process or the simplification that this bill would provide. But, Mr. Chair, we strongly support the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. Next is Matt Mossman. Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Matt Mossman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Inter-County Association, which is 15 counties across the state, 4 suburban and 11 greater Minnesota counties. About 35% of Minnesotans live in the counties. We join LMC, AMC, and other associations in support of this bill and thank Representative Swedzinski for bringing the bill forward and his continued championship, and Mr. Chair for hearing the bill. Building on Mr. Carlson's comments, of which we agree with and support, I would just note that the significant increase in the revenue estimate for House File 728, from my perspective, really highlights the two key policy issues that are so important to making progress on the general law change here. The current system is not practical, it's not working, it's not being used, and it's not even really a good way to go about public projects to separate these costs from the contractors who would normally take liability for the delivery and storage, et cetera, of these materials. And secondly, it's a significant shell game that we need to solve. Local projects are paying a lot of money, collecting a lot of money in property taxes that could be better used for other public health and safety projects here on public infrastructure. Every year, there are dozens of legislative bills, as you know, that come forward for individual exemptions, and there are dozens of special law exemptions already in statutes. And all of those are justified, but they're also indicative of why a statewide solution is needed. Local public infrastructure priorities are different for different jurisdictions, buildings, roads, facilities age at different times, and local governments need to be investing their dollars where the priorities are in any given location. And to do that fairly, a general law exemption would ensure that all of these projects, which are important to public safety, local jobs, local economy, in areas like Representative Swedzinski cited, sewer and sanitation, school facilities, roads and bridges for counties is a huge part
of it. Mr. Mossman, if you can wrap that up, please.
Absolutely. We just encourage you to pass this legislation to find a way to put us on the pathway to a general law solution for this. We'd appreciate it. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for your support. And I'll stick on for questions as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mossman. Matt Hilgert.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm batting cleanup, and I don't know that there's much to clean up. So I'll leave folks with one other additional point to consider and then two quotes. As folks have kind of pointed out, these aren't just infrastructure projects. They're not just libraries, courthouses, schools, roads, bridges, highway infrastructure. They're also economic drivers. So think about it in that context as well, that each of these projects can employ an array of skilled workers that provide great paying jobs and in turn drive our economies, not just our local economies, but also our statewide economies. Moving away from that macroeconomic argument, I'd leave members with two quotes from county administrators from different areas of the state. The first quote comes from Representative Swazinski's own Lacaparle County, where the county engineer stated, "Sure, we could avoid paying sales tax on all materials for construction purchases if we purchased them ourselves and had the contractor install them. However, this would lead to an administrative and liability nightmare. What happens if we buy too much or not enough? Who pays for the delay while we are waiting for more to be delivered? What if the material is wrong in shape, size, or color and doesn't meet the spec? Who is responsible? Also, if a project has failure, was it a bad product or bad workmanship? How do you prove it? These are just some of the issues that keep county engineers from doing this." And as Representative Swazinski pointed out, we know that if this bill passes, that it would actually make projects literally go further. In Lacaparle County, it's one more mile a year in highway overlay. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that's actually about 15% more than they would be able to do each year. And in Itasca County, it's about 3 miles. The last quote I'd leave folks with is from Rock County, who says, "Right now, we are in essence taxing our residents more via our property tax levy in order to pay sales tax to a state government." So I'd end by just thanking folks for their support, their bipartisan support for this over the years. I know there is a cost, and we are hopeful that the February forecast looks a bit more rosier, and we might be able to revisit this later on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Swazinski.
Representative Swazinski.
Sorry. See, I was speaking to a constituent and a friend here at the local town tavern, and he's working on the Third Street Bridge in Minneapolis. It's a big project and a couple other projects. So he worked for, I think, Ames. Anyway, if they finish a project, as you're probably aware, some of these state projects as well, they finish it early, there's a bonus. You tell me that if they finish 6 months early on one of the projects, and I don't know if it was the Third Street Bridge or they're doing the same lane from Lexington, from Lane to Lexington or something like that. But if they finish 6 months early, there'll be a $15 million bonus by finishing 6 months early. That's a lot of money. And of course, it's mostly estate money, I would imagine. So your bill, I presume, would really help facilitate. I guess I shouldn't presume. Would your bill help facilitate some of the projects finishing early and then providing bonuses for a project that's deemed finishing earlier than scheduled?
Representative Swazinski.
You know, it's mostly Representative McDonald. So the bill is focused really on the sales tax paid. So regardless of, you know, where the money is coming from, you know, it would it would benefit everyone. I mean, it would either benefit the taxpayer, it would benefit the construction company, because now all of a sudden they're having to handle less, carry less debt, or waiting for future payouts from the governmental entity, you know, just all around. And it would, you know, this bill fundamentally will ease the burden on this committee. And I think that alone is a good reason to include it in the bill. We'll have less bills to hear. So,
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Yes, I don't think there was much of a connection from my analogy, but I do really appreciate the bill and support it 100%. It's a very good idea. I'm surprised we haven't put this into law years ago. So thank you, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you very much. Representative Swazinski, final comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Certainly appreciate this consideration to be included in the bill.
Thank you very much. And Representative Swazinski renews his motion to lay over House File 768 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you, Representative Swazinski. Thank you. And testifiers. Mayor Burns, thank you. House File 184, last bill on the agenda. Representative Detmer, if you would like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I move House File 184 to be included in the Tax Omnibus Bill of the Tax Committee.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And House File 184, it's a bill that provides sales tax exemptions for items purchased or leased connected with lawful gambling. Under the current law, lawful gambling organizations pay sales tax on items purchased and awards as prizes to the lawful games, as well as items used in conducting the lawful games. This bill will exempt these items from the sales tax, and the bill is effective for sales and purchases made after June 30th, 2021, Mr. Chair. And there are two testifiers that I have listed. The first one is L. Lund, he's the executive director with Ally Charities. So, there's a Paul Edwards with the American Legion. So if L. Lund would come forward first.
Well, thank you, Representative Detmer. Mr. Lund, please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Alan Lund. I'm the executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. We're a 501c6 that represents all licensed gambling charities in Minnesota. Currently, there's about 1,150 of us. Today, we are taxed on our what we call our net receipts. So sales minus prizes are our net receipts. We are allowed no deductions of any kind. The average Minnesota charity pays 27% on every dollar that we get to the bank, and we can pay as high as 36%. This bill would allow us to be exempt from those sales taxes, and the primary hits are on our paper purchasing of our paper games and of our electronics revenue share. So we would ask for your support of this bill. It would give us the opportunity to get more money to our bottom line to benefit our local communities and our missions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. We also have Paul Edwards. Mr. Edwards?
Yes, here I am.
Oh, very good. Well, welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Paul Edwards. I currently serve as the commander of the 6th District for the Department of Minnesota for the American Legion. I represent about 70 Legion posts up and down through central Minnesota. We go from Zimmerman in the south all the way up to Baudette in the north, and from side to side from Wadena to McGregor, about 16,000 Legion members. I just want to echo the comments that my friend and fellow Legionnaire, Mr. Lund, said. The American Legion, through our charitable gambling organizations, we pay a lot in taxes. I have served as a gambling manager and have served as a post adjutant. And as a district commander, I've sat in many, many, many different post meetings. And I hear how much the gambling managers report that they have said they're spending on supplies to support their gambling. And because I know the percentages, I have an idea of how much they're paying out in gambling taxes and in these sales taxes. I appreciate Representative Detmer's. I know he has a bunch of bills that he has put forward, a lot of them on gambling to help us out. And I would ask that you support these, because every penny that the American Legion gambling organizations and the other charitable organizations, every penny that we keep that we don't have to pay out in taxes and fees, means that we can better support our missions. For the American Legion, we support veterans causes, we support children and youth. We spend time in the schools teaching children about flag etiquette and patriotism. Those are things that the gambling funds support. Plus, we pay for school lunches. We pay for children to learn how to ski. We pay for veterans to go. There's many things. I could go on for hours, but obviously we don't have time for that. But the gambling fees or gambling funds that we have, the more money we get to keep in our pockets is the more that we get to send out to help the local communities. So thank you for the time to speak. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, representatives. I appreciate the opportunity. And I'll stay on it just in case there are any questions.
Thank you, Commander Edwards. We have one, Representative Les Legarde.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the bill author, Representative Detmer, and to the two testifiers, the American Legion, the VFWs, and all of our communities across the state of Minnesota. I know what you bring to the table, and I know the struggle that you guys are facing, and I wholeheartedly support this bill. And I thank Representative Detmer for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see no further questions. So, Representative Detmer, do you have any closing comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members. As Mr. Edwards pointed out, and I'm a member of American Legion and the VFW. I'm a member there also. But I taught and coached for 34 years at Forest Lake High School, and I spent many times going to the different organizations in my community to get funds for team uniforms and if we needed to take a trip and so forth. Those funds came from these organizations like the American Legion and VFW, the Lions Club, all the different organizations that we have that also work in the areas of legalized gambling. I would like to see more of this money stay with the local community where it can do its best. And so that's why I'm bringing this bill forward and other bills that I've brought forward. And I can honestly say I'm not a gambler, but I see the importance of this bill and the importance of keeping money in our local communities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Detmer. And Representative Detmer renews his motion to lay over House File 184 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. So members and testifiers, thank you for keeping us on time today. Our next meeting is Thursday, so no meeting tomorrow. On Thursday, we will hear the governor's tax bill. And if you remember, we did get a presentation from Commissioner Doty on the tax bill. And so the primary focus will be to allow testifiers a chance. So testifiers, start signing up, 3 minutes. That will be your chance on the governor's tax proposal. And then members, you'll, of course, have a chance to ask questions and make comments there. But primarily, it'll be kind of responding to testifiers, and we'll have staff do a quick overview of the bill. So that's what's on the docket for Thursday. Have a wonderful rest of the day, everyone, and the Taxes Committee is adjourned.